Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. Listen, listen, listen to my heart's song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee.
I have a question. Does anyone like a glass of water? Adana, in some texts it's said that before one eats, one should offer the food to God. But as far as logic's concerned, I don't see how one can offer something to somebody that already owns it. Could you explain what they mean, please?
Thank you.
Yes. When we meditate and if we just did, what should be our attitude? Should we be looking forward to certain thoughts or certain images? or should we be just blank and be open to whatever may happen?
Meditation is the ancient way of being entertained, like a TV set where you don't tell it what to do, but just watch it and don't analyze it and be entertained. And in ancient time, man looked within the atomic structure of the cellular mass and got entertained by the producer called God in the creation of ions or atomic structure. So when the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. You don't analyze it. You don't tell it what to do. The light is shining in the darkness like you turn on a TV set and you just watch. Let your light so shine before men that they see the good works. Make the time you take to watch without analyzing, try to tell it what to do, and glorify your Father. You suddenly start to feel your sense of joy, peace, and your identity with your atomic nature. So meditation is the art of identifying with the atoms of your own cellular mass without analyzing it. So you don't have a single thing to do, but sit down and watch it. But because we are programmed by language, we're going to try to analyze it. We are programmed by geometry. We are programmed by numbers and alphabet. And each one of us is going to try to analyze his own atomic photography. And that's the argument that goes out of your brain, and the fears and the frustration of what you want to see. But you can't tell your movie screen or your TV set what to click when you turn it on. You sit down and watch it. You may not like it, turn it on. If you like it, you enjoy it. But if you stick it out inside the cellular mass, you end up with one result, complex vision, which is the ability to see through every object in the world. So that's what you're aiming at. The ability to see truth and to become one with the reality of your structure. We call it God. Not somebody sitting at home, but a resident in you as you. No sex that can't be denied and is totally quick. Go away all your fantasies, magic, and geometry. So, when you sit down to meditate, that is what you do. You're becoming a witness. That's why they refer to as Jehovah's Witness, not the one on the church. A real witness of light in your cellular structure. So, it's not a matter of analyzing or wondering where you'll go or why you have to go. It is the fact that you have built into you the most unique system to observe your structure and your very core. Now, you can be entertained externally with a TV set. You can be entertained with an X-ray machine or a microscope. But the greatest discovery is looking into your own structure, looking into your own makeup, and validating the atomic physics. Three men are part of the same. Science is validating everything the realized man has seen within his own atomic structure. The equipment may be. Just the fact is that equipment provides more people to observe the phenomenon than the one person who may accomplish it, or the 100 people trying to do it. 99 are busy analyzing. One may just merely sit down and watch it and enjoy it and quote what they saw. But that's what you try to do. So, not only your failure, it's something to be very happy that you have the opportunity to look inside your own structure and enjoy it. It's cheap. It's no money. Imagine you can see all the atoms in the universe by the earth. That's why Jesus would say, seek ye first, not second, first. the kingdom, the story is big. God created life, which is the beginning. And his righteousness, the very large operate, put you together. You free you from the analytical fixations, frustrations, doubts, incorrect decisions. We know God is the same. Then there is no comparison because everybody is equal. The God in me is not different than the God in me. And the joy you experience from looking inside is not different than the joy I will experience from looking inside. The end result of the joy, if you sit down and watch it and don't analyze it, is called health. H-E-A-L-T-H. But it's also spelled H-E-A-L-T-H. Heck, all there is. Life is all there is. Composing you as atoms. So you ain't going no place, you ain't come from no place, you're here and all you come. You may not like it. But I love it. Now, prayer is valid. You can tell God what you want. Because we've got ego implanted in us as individuality. And that's all right, because we need it to have our consent. That's all good. So you have any right to pray and ask Him for what you want. You may not plant it. So that's the game you play with prayer. But if you keep up, this is what will happen. All your good desires plus your lousy ones will materialize. So there you'll find out it's not so nice to pray. You better sit down and keep your mouth shut and watch. And it's called meditation. The peace I give now, the word over there. The word gives you 6 feet on the ground. And then you rest in peace. The creative consciousness gives you peace to quit the life moment to moment and not to be afraid. So prayer has a value if you don't know what it is, where to go. And then finally, when you do realize what prayer will do for you, you start meditating, accepting yourself. Now, everyone is at battle. The series of desires. And everyone that tries to make mistakes correctly. But what is more important between prayer and meditation is to know who you are when you're sung the sweet of night, if you're a man or a woman. Then all your worries about existing or not existing, but end right there. If you know when you are sound asleep at night, if you are not very well. So when you sit down and meditate, don't analyze and be happy. They tell us in meditation to go and fall asleep. Because the game is the chance to know who you are. And that's it. If you fall asleep, you may not know who you are in this sleep. But if you can walk through sleep and not lose your consciousness, you may activate the memory of you. And then, when you come up and look at me, you start laughing at each other. And once you kids. Well, we all know that we are. So that's an opportunity. I can't do it for you. I got to find out for myself who am I when I'm so asleep, if I'm man or woman.
just as much. You got a power to yourself, and you're sound asleep. If you're a man, you're looking. You have no open eyes, and you know for sure who you are. Without any doubt, let peace out of you. Thank you, baby. That's the truth. For the time. You did not come, but let's come.
Donna, could I ask you a question?
Yeah.
In the latest SRF magazine, they had a feature called Spiritual Adventures. It was the story of a 37-year-old woman who died of cancer. And I was so inspired reading about her because she was so totally aware of God's presence to the very end. But she went through some healing, a nutritional healing, that helped everybody else, but it didn't help her. And I wanted to ask you, does this mean that she had to die at the age of 37? Or, in other words, I've been trying to understand, was this her destiny, to die at the age of 37?
Yes, most of you. You see, you cannot be the question of Jesus. Why did he have to die at 32? Was that her destiny? If the life of the individual are the circumstances that they undergo the pain, is any consolation for those who are surrounding them and act as an inspiration to cope with their own pain and anguish and not be self-destructive, then age 37 of 32 was active and got it for that person. Or hundred and above. As long as their life is an inspiration for it, it's good for their own ambition. But if it's not an inspiration to cope with anguish, then they'll be dead.
Alright, thank you. I thought to myself, by dying, she inspired me, and I read it twice.
Yes. So. In that way, she lived a full period of time as an inspiration for you to go to your own ambition. See, Jesus did the same thing when he was on the cross. And before they nailed him to the cross, he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he saw his own crucifixion. And he asked for the cup to be removed. He asked for the experience not to be lived out. And then he commented about the experience by saying, not my will, but thy will be done. Simply because by going through it, it would be an inspiration for those who have to face their own anguish and might be just self-destructive.
Well, you know, she did pray, change nothing in my life, change me.
That's the attitude to go through and cope moment to moment. That's got it. God, that's the inspiration for others, not to be self-destructive or run from the situation. See, the limit of the age is unimportant. 10, 20, 30, 40, 60, 80. That's unimportant. What is important, are you an inspiration to those who have an anguish like yourself? Are you coping with it without fear of being self-destructive? No matter if it ends in 10, 12, 20, 35, or 50 years. The point is, are you good? Without panic, without rejection.
Do we all have a destiny? In other words, are we allotted only so many years? Or does that change according to our state of consciousness?
We all have allotted kindness to the world. But what is important about your allotted time is to make your allotted time to understand it that it represents your cross. Jesus said, pick up my cross and follow me, right or wrong? See that you can't pick up his cross and follow me, because you weren't near to the cross and hold the palm of your head and stare at the side. But you pick up your own cross as your horoscope, discover your heart. And you're living it now. And if you're going through it without complaining, moment to moment to the end of it, then you are performing exactly as you expected by him. Then the reward is given. Because all the reward is, can you stick up your commitment to your horoscope without running to it? It's not important how long. What's important about it is to him that overcomes the last 7 minutes of the time. But I'm making it feel the whole world. If you think about it, don't complain, don't try to panic, just go moment to moment. Though it's painful, go moment to moment to find a conclusion. The reward is there. It's called a spiritual aspect. Either you rot or you don't rot or you take it with you. Well, he doesn't rot and he took it with him and he can't even find him rot. See, and some people don't rot. That's the mystery of modern science. Though he didn't make it, but they rot it. Because they're funny. So that's all we have. So if she is an inspiration to you and to others, then really intelligence requires evidence enough for modern science. It's there because you can't kill it already. It became a butterfly, butterfly going up. So for that reason, this mechanism is designed to validate, can you assume a responsibility of pleasure? That is all it asks for this period. It doesn't matter if you're smart or more otherwise. Can you assume your responsibility and pleasure? Like going to school. You wouldn't graduate a person if they failed. And don't pass the grades, you got to send them back to the start until they're complete to get their certificate, right? So it's the same way with the divinity in the cells. You start out with cellular mass locked up with a bunch of ego games in a corner script. And you have to sort it out. And then you have two ways to do it. Prayer, meditation. Prayer is hanging on and asking for changes. Meditation is hanging on and don't ask for no changes. Just go through it. That's why he went to the gardens and then at night to withdraw from society and go inside. He's trying to teach his own students how to meditate. To look inside your head. Now, what is consoling? This is atoms. Slow down to the tissue in order to play a domestic game of ego and creativeness. Ego in the sense of I, of individuality. Creativeness is a unified totalness. But you can't have unified without some kind of a relative plate. Like this pen. It wouldn't function if it didn't have two ends. That's the dualism of it. Yet I respect one end, I make sure that I don't push the other end and mess up my ship. See what I mean? So that's what the unity and the identity of an ego is. I am entitled to an ego because I was created without my choice. That gives me a sense of individuality. Out of that, I'm entrusted to find my identity through the process of confrontation. And that is what creativity is. That's what the karma is, that's what the horoscope is, that is what the divinity is in all of us. A sense of obligation to fulfill it and not to run from it. That's the unity. Anguish and the conflict ego.
You were created without your permission?
Yes.
Can we continue with this?
So then they were here before you created it. What were
yes.
you? See, that's the question. What were you before you were created?
Me personally, or me as a soul,
or anything in this universe, what was it before this created?
Thought?
Hmm?
Thought? Thought?
Good. Then how can you take a thought and ask it permission to use it? Any thought that you've got now, ask it permission to use it. So you see, that's the whole problem with it. God said, come let us make man our manifestation in our own image and likeness. Yes, I come let me make a manifestation of my image and likeness. He said, come let us explore, make man our manifestation of. We didn't ask him anybody's consent. In our own image and likeness, male and female created them. So where are we being asked to be created? Do you ask a pile of porcelain permission to make a cup out of it? Say they drink out of it? After it's finished made, the cup can only do two things. Accept the hot water in the form of some kind of a drink in it, or remain empty.
Who then created the ego?
Hmm?
Who then created the ego?
The very creator himself, the ego. In order to play the game of self-contemplation, us. Yes, I come, let me say that, us. Creativity and egotism are two functions in you as a manifesto form. You have both because you are a Xerox copy. That's what they call made in his image.
Mm.
Now, let me ask you, are you two sperms or two ovums as a human being? Or what are you made up of? Without any guessing or imagination or fashion, are you a composition of two sperms or two ovums? Or your composition of one each. Then you see the thing is valid. Then that it throughout you, the daughter of mama, as a sperm, hundreds of thousands are chasing you to get to that one ovum. And that one ovum hasn't been used because you can't use a used ovum to make a human being. So every ovum is a virgin. And the loser can't be born. And the winner has got to pull every trick in the book to get born. So think of it before you decide now, if you're being left out. Because in this room, our winners, which you can be losers, are telling yourself to come up. I don't know how to really being born. Don't be wrong. See, you are a winner. You're a composite, a sperm, and an ovum. You have ego, and you have creativity. The genesis of my doctor. The accomplishment of the process. So, its sperm was asked to be a winner. And it was thrown out. Only the one that decided it wanted to survive. So that initiates what? A tremendous amount of ego to beat all the rest to get born. So if you don't have ego drive to make you accomplish, then you'll phase out. Ego is not a bad thing. It's the attachment to what the ego does that creates suffering. Because sleep is your first indication that you may have to lose your ego and you don't know who you are when you're sound asleep. And if you don't wake up, you're sure that there is your ego. You'll bury it. What will they bury? Creativity, ego, or the form in which the two are playing the game? It's all a body. Good. So you see why we have to make this inward reconciliation by looking inward. That there is a seeking for us, the kingdom of God first, outside of you or inside of you. That's the direction, that's the location. It's already pointed out by the wise men and who've done it. Inside of you, not outside. And the more you look at your atomic structure and identify with without analyzing it, just look at it, it'll teach you what you are. You cannot teach it what you think it is.
and that's where we come smack in confrontation with our ego.
Then you will find the word ego, E-G-O. Energy going all the time. Never turn off. Is life ever turned off? Then what are you? You're an ongoing energy principle. But you're locked into the programism or fixations of the language that ego is a bad thing. Ego is simply the labeling of yourself as I am. I am board, I am chair, I am shoe, I am carpet, I am. Can you get out of the I am? And so when Moses sat down and looked at his head, falling burning bush, and he's hearing this voice telling him, go tell these people, ask this Pharaoh to let the people go. He said, who am I going to ask? Who are you? What is it? And all you hear in this voice, he said, I am. I am that I am. Imagine trying to tell a bunch of people who are slaves, punishing and in misery, and I am wants them to come out. And then they got this thing. He said, look, man, you're crazy. You have to give them something better than that. So he gave them a word or a name and then broke them down. Today we find that's the most intriguing principle. He said, Jehovah said. And most people don't even know it. Jehovah thinks it's somebody that told him. It turned out to be four letters creating a word. Yehovah. I, period. E, period. E, period. A, period. Take away the periods and put the four letters together, what you got. And Mr. Freud came along and take the first two letters and said, without that you have nothing to relate to. It's called your id, your center of identity. And all ideation is thought. Can you get out of ideation? Where do you store your thoughts? Where are they organized? Only the ideation of you? Or the identity of you? The id of you? Or what is the id and I of you? We're coming back to the same principle. I am that I am. But they have to have something to trigger them to move. But he said, I am sent them. They won't believe it. Well, he said, Jehovah sent them. You know, good, that's a nice word. Their own ideation turned them on to aspire to liberate themselves. And whenever you feel despondent, you get an inspiration, it's an ideation, it's a thinking thought process which you generate inside to turn you on to that. Like a car stagnant, you got to turn the ignition to get it to move.
So the ideas or thoughts originating within us as a person, or are we somehow in our cognizant but in connection with our soul? And is that where these thoughts and ideas are coming from?
Man is soul, he doesn't have soul. your scripture tells you that. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female created them. And God breathed breath of life into man, and man became living jackass. Or living tree. Or man became living well. Soul.
Mm-hmm.
So is he soul or does he have soul?
He is soul.
Good. Then, in this environment where this manifestation is occurring, come let us make man in our own image, then that tells you God has got to be everywhere at the same time before he starts the creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be outside no place and then do something apart from him. Well, we haven't found in this universe any less or any more than 144 elements to make up this environment that we live in, that forms all life. And these elements are surrounding us, and they're called cosmic dust. Dust you are, dust you return. So, where do you find dust the most? In the ground? And you call it soil. That's who I am. Think for one moment. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness. Male and female created them. And God willed that the man better life of man became living soil. That's more accurate, scientifically valid. You are living soil, living elements. You are not what you think you are, having something. You don't have soul. You are soul, or you are the dynamic, cosmic living soil. 144 elements, Creator Himself, modified, synchronized in a tissue organism. This is a miniature universe in a bigger universe. Science is admitting it today in all the equipment that this is the most unique material you will ever find on the entire universe. It's called tissue, otherwise known as flesh. Petrified elements, rigid. It contains iron, it may contain carbon and all different, but this one is viable. It contains iron and carbon too. And it has one thing that this one won't have: identity, breath of life. So, John, who wrote his scripture now, or indication of how you put together, he said, in the beginning was the word, the ideation, the sonics, and the word was with God, the creative intelligence of the ideation. And the word was God. Life itself, sonics is life. Ultrasonic, supersonic is all life. Creative force, regulating matter. Atoms, and was made flesh. That means sonics slowed down and became optics, gas, temperature, liquid, crystalline mass of 144 elements, and innovated into tissue, via vegetation by photosynthesis, right up to this present state called monkey. We got a sperm. Is a marine life, and an ovum is an egg, and it takes two to form a new people. So here we are inside of our own cellular mass, with all the 144 elements put together. But you know, no human being can breathe through his nose inside his mother's womb, no matter how he tries. And until he comes out and they cut that cord, he ain't breathing yet. He don't have no individuality. And when the cord is cut and the pressure is pushed against his nostril, the air moves in. Therefore, he isn't breathing. He doesn't have the power to breathe in. He's pressurized by the environment, and that's a fact. That's not imagination. And when he's pressurized, if his body synchronizes to constrict and dilate, which the Oriental man called the yin yang, osculate or vibrate. And you have a living human being. If it doesn't synchronize on time, you have to get an artificial machine to try and induce the timing. And if that artificial machine can't do the job, you throw it back in the ground while it's soil, and you feel the fear, it's a fetus, it didn't make it, it's a human being. So then, when we start arguing about what is life and what is human being, and what is individuality, physics may make us look at ourselves more factual and appreciate our divinity better, not our churchianity. So you can get locked up in churchianity and make all kinds of labels of what. But when you really look at yourself in a scientific way, you may discover the real spiritual truth about yourself. You are living soil, living soul. Now, soil isn't something degrading. When you come to put life into it, one of all the four elements, and you get up to walk, and it doesn't walk where you do it. It goes back to where it comes up from, one of all the four elements, disintegrating back to place. And you put it together, and it don't rot. Even if it don't seem to be breathing, that's what freaks us out. There are a lot of case history in the book called The Incorruptibles, meaning they don't rot. And all the case histories inside that book so far have been gone. 90% are women. So, an interesting phenomenon. And then when you go to the next level up, from a non-rotting body, made up of elements, to be able to pick up itself and go away through a wall, not through the door of a house, and leave us wondering where it is in the world of invisibleness. It then makes you take full stock of what you have and how you're selling yourselves short, looking for some imaginary existence, and you've got it all here. And like the man says, you're like a dog that has a gold ring around its neck, because he made us in his own image and likeness. And what is unique now? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was the God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt where? In man. That creative principle chose only human beings to dwell in. It didn't choose a plant to dwell in. It didn't choose an animal to dwell in. It chose the human form to dwell in. Now, think for one moment. What is dwelling in you? And who are you?
You are God?
Not a God. Yes, we are God.
And do we, being a God, also have created the world?
Everything is created here already.
The question is, if we have any say in creation of other things after we were, or as gods, were created from a god, could we then, as God, create?
Let us look at our brother Jesus. When he was in the body, did he create anything that was not already here, or did he rearrange things to satisfy those who had a need? When you create, you have to add that is not there. If you rearrange is what is there to fulfill a need that is not able to close the gap of time, therefore, what are you endowed with? To create or rearrange?
Yes, because it is given to you. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female created them. And God breathed breath of life into man, and man became living soul. Go forth, multiply, and have dominion over the universe. Not sell off your franchises, and you can't create, arrange. That's what dominion is. You can rearrange all the atoms to any shape or form to a need. But you can't add to it or take away from it. It is already what it is. If a fish is here, it's already here before you came. But if you're hungry, you can speed up the process of having more fish in a shorter space of time, but you can't create a new species of fish. What new species do you create? Everything is here already, but you can rearrange the quantity to suit the need. All right? 400,000 people. Now, 4,000 people are sitting down, and he has compassion on them. He wants to feed them food. So he turns to his student, he said, now, go buy some bread. That's what he said. Literally, he said, go buy bread. The student looking at the course, he don't have the money to buy bread for 2,000 people. And he said, we don't have money. Now, he can't go make money. That becomes profiting. That's not valid. So he said, then what have you got? Somebody said, we have a few fishes and a few loaves. Okay, fine, put it there. And they say he blessed it. And he said, now go feed the rest. From the same bowl of a few fishes and bread, he is what? Expanding the law of what? Multiplication, which gives him the power of dominion, not franchising, not setting up his own laws. He is applying the power of sonics by the speech over the atomic mass to speed up its Xeroxing effect, and thereby satisfy what? A hungry need among people. But if this was an imagination, a placebo effect, or hypnosis, is what happens after the freedom. They said they picked up several baskets of crumbs and bones, but they didn't tell you how long it took to pick it up. I've been to a place where there were only 1,000 people, and we had to clean up after them all the paper stuff that they threw on. And to this day, I tell you, it took us 72 hours to clean up with it all on this. Let alone try to clean up for 4,000 people with breadcrumbs and bones from a fish. You work, man, and you really know you work, man. And you're guessing, and you're fooling yourself about it. But that's how come we know scientifically there is no magic that the creative consciousness can extend the Xeroxing effect on the atom. Don't make it.
Would you tell us a story about Yogananda and the carrot juice?
Oh, yeah. Years ago, when Yogananda was in the body, there were 36 people who came to visit him, and they were all from out of town. And he wanted to be a good host, so he asked the girl, one of the ones there, if she would serve some carrot juice, because he loved carrot juice. So she went to the refrigerator, and there was only about a little pint, not enough for about 3 glasses. They didn't have any more carrots, but this was all filled up. And she realized it's impossible to serve carrot juice. So she came over and said to Yogananda, Master, we don't have enough to make carrot juice. They said Yogananda looked at her and said, please serve carrot juice. Kept on talking to the 36 people. She went over to the refrigerator and in tears and agony prayed for her new God. What am I going to do? She comes back again, empty handed, and tears.
says, Master, we don't have to practice. He says, will you please serve Karajus? And if everybody, Bhagavad Yogananda's voice, you know how he talks. Because the first time I heard his voice, and then I heard a tape of it the second time, he said, that's the way he really talks. He talks like Hitler. I tell you, you have to grab it. That's the way he talks. You know, not nice, you know, strong, smooth. It's not power in the voice. Please, show me. She went there. And Asha decided to do it. Okay, take out 36 glasses in the tray and take the milk container and try to see. But she ends up with 36 filled glasses and the same little container in her hand. Now, in her mind, this is a placebo effect. This is hypnosis. And because she's conditioned to meditation and other things, she puts it there and she comes about and she looks for Master, the Master looks for him. And she hands everybody a glass of orange juice. I mean, carrot juice. And they drank their carrot juice. Yogananda spoke for 12 hours after. You can imagine. You ever washed a glass stained with carrot juice? It's not a really difficult thing. After it's been stained, it was supposed to build all this. Sitting dry. When they got up and left, she said she washed glasses for fulfilled her satisfaction, it was no imagination. And the little container with the carrot juice was still back in the refrigerator. But there she has 36 dirty glasses, all stained with carrot juice. And she had three more. So she knew that the Master was satisfying a need, but he did not make something new in the universe. He didn't create anything. He Xeroxed what was there. That's the principle behind it. Now you take every so-called miracle and you will see it's fulfilling a need of what is apparently there, even raising the dead. It's not adding to life or anything. It is what is there restoring it back in balance, or is relaxing it. Even the wine at the wedding, when he came there, his mother said, we have no wine. His first answer is, my time ain't come. What's that to me? It's not my time yet. But the mother kept persisting and said, do what he says. And then he turns to his servant and says, okay, fill the pots. Forgive the guy who had the head of the table. So they pour the water of wine. Creating, he's erupting what they have. Then the complaint is, how come you serve the best wine last, when you usually serve the good wine first, and the lousy wine last when everybody is almost drunk and knows about the other people? And this is what we're looking at in all the miracles of all different churches of faith, men or women who have done it. It's a erupting effect. Now that isn't saying you don't have to create the power of the universe. But it's not superseding the boundary lines of what is already created. It's fulfilling needs. Let me ask a simple question now. Seeing that you want to get into the state of how you feel inside of yourself, let's say for one moment all of us in this room are lying down dead. And then walks God. Hi folks, what would you like? Your breath back? Some powers to perform miracles? Or some possessions to make you kings and queens? What would you ask for?
Your breath.
That's because you're exactly what you were when he created you. Come, let us make man in our own image and likeness, male and female, created you. Living soil or dead soil. So you see, you want your breath because that's all you've got to identify with the creator of you. And the ego part of you
is deciding the choice, either to have the breath back, to experience a sense of identity, because the ego cannot apply magical powers or can't hold no possessions. The reason why you can't apply magical powers or hold any possession is you don't know who you are when you're sound asleep. And if you don't wake up, you're back right where you are without your breath. So what is important? To breathe or not to breathe, or to think you can perform miracles and think you have a fantastic creative mind that will defy the universe or all the possessions that you think you can keep. All of us in this room got to breathe. Like it or not. When we don't breathe, what's good?
But it would make no difference to our soul. The difference would make if we were lying under it. Why would we wish to have the breath back? Why should we not continue on? As we need to feel that.
Breath of life is soul. It makes atoms live. You don't have soul. You are breath of life. God is the only breath of life, because He is breath of life Himself. He infuses His creation to allow it to experience identity, to experience ego. He is the unified field. There is no place he can go that He's not already occupying. But out of His nature, He created a manifestation, a Xerox copy, to play the game of what? If this Xerox copy can take a commitment and live it out, that would tell me then that this Xerox copy has a true creative nature in it, the true commitment to live out an obligation. That's more important in any of us here. Can we, with the opportunity in human form, with creative life allowing us to breathe, go through the test of taking an obligation and live it out without panic and without suicidal tendencies? The man Jesus went for 40 days and 40 nights in the desert without eating. Have you ever tried one day without eating? Good. Try 40 days and see what happens. That's a real test, you know. Good. And he's confronted by this so-called devil, which is his ego. And I never met a devil yet, but I sure can't pick up egos. And the ego is saying, why are you fasting? Why don't you change these stones into bread? Why are you denying this mechanism to run to the party? It is the answer that tells us the difference between creativity and intellectualism and ego. Man, this manifestation, male or female, does not live, is not existing by bread alone, by indirect forms of energy alone. That's what a bread is. That's what a cake is. That's what a fruit is. They're indirect forms of energy contained in their geometry. This mechanism isn't sustained by them alone. But by every, that does not exclude, now the word every doesn't have any exclusion. That's total. But by every word, this is sonics. This is not matter. This is not food now. This is sonics. But by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. The creative intelligence is sonics that holds this atomic mass in a geometrical shape of its own structure. That's why it's a Xerox copy of electricity and magnetism incorporated in a chemical form called flesh, which is a viable medium for 144 elements. We are living in it as an experience for one purpose. The next two tests that he went through will show the value of being tested in it. First test is to tell us that we don't live by bread alone, we live by sonics, directly. The second test is, throw yourself over this mountain, the Lord in the heavens, and your Father in heaven sent some nice angels to catch you. And I was a kid studying to be a priest,
I used to say, come on, Brandy, just jump, 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 jump. That's the time I've been and then I never see him jump at all. But I fell off a bit too. And then I had to learn to live in myself. The answer he gave to the suicidal condition of jumping, why don't you jump? Father will send angels to catch you, that's your hurt your feet. That's a suicidal talk. That's putting creative intelligence to the test if you can override suicide. Pray, talk, run away, avoid. Those are all suicidal tendencies. But he gives an answer. Thou shalt not tempt him. We don't have the right to take our life because it isn't ours. And we don't make life because God is life, allowing this form to experience an opportunity to reconcile between an ego drive and a creative drive by giving it an obligation and see if it will complete it, live through it. Then the third test is, if you bow down and worship me, man, I give you all these things. Everybody wants to be rich. Dead men and poor men are very rich in the grave. They don't own a dog, aren't they? And when they're sound asleep, who is rich and who is poor? So he says, get thee behind me, Satan. And then he goes, look, man, there's a bunch of baloney. You can't own nothing but your ego. There's not a single thing that your ego can own. He knew atomic physics so accurately that he broke through all the illusion games of intellectualism, ideation, and thought processes set up by ego and centered in creativity, the unity of life.
We have a butterfly basket over here if anyone cares to put in a love offering or a donation for Satsang tonight.
Confrontation, say in environments, going to do something to traumatize you, then you have the option of letting the traumatize you exist. Can you go ahead and resist without complaining and keeping it traumatized? Or do you just sit back and go complain?
Jesus had to make a decision, either to be nailed to a cross or to run away and hide in some part of the desert. Not knowing the outcome of the confrontation, which did he? But he gave himself a good reason to do it. He knew he was designed by the Creator. He knew those tests were the Creator itself, testing its own self. Now, let me ask you, if you're an inventor and you made a beautiful invention, how are you going to know if it's good to be tested? Huh? Good. And you then when you try it out, you know what is called the breaking point. And therefore you have what is called a safety factor, guaranteed process set into it. So imagine if you, a human being, think that way, creative intelligence, which is a total life process in all things, was liberated. It's testing you at the emotional level. Can you face a confrontation? Don't panic. Go through it and see what it will do for you. That is why the thing comes up by saying, to him that overcome it, overcome what? His ego. That's all he has to overcome. I will not send forth a second time. I wouldn't push him through a biological condition of breaking up the body in an angry state of ego structure. But I'll make that structure a pillar, a permanent condition, non-decomposing. Even take it off and go away, nobody can find it. And travel like freeway. That's what it's called. Pillar is a house of the creation of the Lord. You will be a permanent truth. That's the best, isn't it? But look at your hand. How many thumbs have you got? One. How many fingers you got? Four together, right? The unusual individual is like the thumb. The run-of-the-mill individual is like the four fingers. We panic, we fear, we huddle together. The unusual steps out to be unusual. They take on the challenge. They may be called weirdo, all kinds of things, crazy, but they stand out. Now, this thumb has three movements. If it does this, and these four fingers go like this, it'll break if it presses too hard. That's your own personal vulnerability. Then it can do this. Stick out here, away from the rest. And you try and squeeze your four fingers with your thumb out here and see how strong your hand is. It is strong enough, right? Therefore, it tells you the weirdo is the center of the light. But then when you take the thumb and you put it outside your four fingers like that, back and forth, see how much power it got. It's not molding the four fingers, and it's not telling the four fingers how to run its life. But it's interacting with the four fingers that they have what? A sense of integrity. And that's what the realized person is all.
Which is yin and which is yang? The thumb and the fingers, which is which?
The thumb by itself, with its three movements, is the yang, the positive. The four fingers, with their togetherness, is the yin.
Thank you.
But the yang represents constriction. The yin represents dilation. So a woman dilates when she's pregnant. That's why we know she is pregnant. She will constrict it when she's pregnant. So that's where you have the movement between yin and yang. It's constriction, dilation. And the only way is to say, when the irresistible force meets the immovable object, we have a what?
The
balance. Then we need this Archimedes with the little lever. All physics are here around us, and then we got to recommend it.
There is some panic of yours over there. You can protect yourselves.
Last time you were here, something along the lines of the elements, and there's so many, I don't exactly have it right, that leave, or I don't remember it. Do you know what I'm referring to? Something about, last time you were here, you said something about the elements. There were so many that went out, or do you remember what I'm asking? Thank there were like four or five that you said.
No, you have.
I don't remember.
12 basic elements and four gases and 128 trace minerals to make up your 144 elements. Out of the 128 trace minerals, 36 are radicals. Four of them are located at each opening of the external body.
Mm-hmm.
As gremlins in early ancient artwork, when they used to draw temples and show devils melting at the windows and the doors, they were trying to indicate that the human body had these elements. And so that was their way of drawing it to remind man. Because paper pen in those days was not available as it is today. So anybody who could put down some kind of an indication of what this structure was, do it at a temple with 10 gates.
Mm-hmm.
And then at each gate they painted these odd looking creatures, leaving us to wonder what kind of fantasy it's all about. But in actuality, it's your body they were trying to draw. With the nine openings that you see externally, and the tenth gate is inside, that's why it's called a ten-gate temple. The door within you. And there are four radicals at each opening, like four gremlins that have shouldered four faces.
Mm-hmm.
A hawk, a lizard, or something. So these are four odd geometries that we're trying to. But they use the geometry as indicative of the reaction of what these radical functions of the elements would do. That was their way of drawing it. Today we know that these radical elements do exist and have a tremendous on our community.
They're just the four gases? That's what they are?
Does Nirvikalpa Samadhi correspond to the achieving 15 minutes in the delta state?
No. Samadhi is the state of awareness that allows you to have context vision. The capacity to see through all objects. It's in two levels or two speeds. There is an immobile level. That means you can't get up or walk with it. But you can see through every object. That's called Satyakalpa Samadhi. What Samadhi means? Universal awareness via convex vision. Or we call it clairvoyant, seer, seeing through. But there are two stages. Immobile is the first stage, that is called sadhita. And then there is mobile, the ability to get up, walk, and function in the world with the fellow man, and don't let them know that you got it. That's called nirvikalpa.
Uh-huh.
So that's the actual science of it. The capacity to function with your convex vision within the mobile and the immobile rates. The immobile is first, like high school is before college. So a master is one who must pass through the first stage. It's called the immobile stage. Then, if he stays long enough to master the mobile stage, we call a Swami. Swami is not a label given for somebody because he plays the role of being holier than thou, or he sits down a long time and talks about religious subjects. A Swami is a person who can slow the brain down to
to stay at Delta level for a minimum of 15 minutes. That's the required time for the brain to experience total cosmic awareness, convex vision, and to be able to get up and walk with. Now, the first 7.5 minutes of Delta is a schizophrenic level. Every schizophrenic person passes. Therefore, the saint and the schizophrenic have one thing in common at the first 7.5 minutes of Delta. They're crazy. But one can't get out of his craziness. The other can get out, so they call him sane or saint. The first one can't get out, he's fully schizophrenic. Because he may think he can walk in front of that car coming on the road and tell himself he can stop it. After 7 minutes, they find out he ain't what he think he is. They're burying him. God, they're not over. Let me know, he is really a schizophrenic. But if he's really got the capacity to go the next 7.5 minutes, it'll be 15 minutes, when he stands up in front of that car, they're carrying the car to the fire. Or the car isn't coming any further than his chest. That's how we know he has achieved now full atomic control of himself. Now, these are not magical powers, they're all atomic laws locked up in us. Now, Mr. Ken Clark gets behind the telephone and unzips and becomes what? Superman. Don't you think you have the same thing locked up in you? But we have to take science fiction to go and funny books to that as a means to shock us into the direction. But we have it already, we just didn't turn on to it. The more we turn on to it, the more we become healthy.
We need help finding the zippers. We need help finding the zippers.
The help is always there because there is a statement of God like this. When the student is ready, the master is there. Now, I wrote one teacher a long time ago and asked him, what constitutes readiness in a student? And he sent me a letter back. On both sides of the paper, not one single space was left vacant. The whole paper on both sides was covered in one word, totally written all over. There was not a single space that could write another word in. And that one word turned out to be frustration. When you are totally frustrated and have no questions to ask, master is there. But as long as you got questions to ask, you aren't ready. The realized person will grant you your experience when you're totally frustrated. But as long as you're not frustrated, and you still got some way your intellect is going to ask questions, not possible. If you got the biography of the yogi, Yogananda was in the same state when he went to his teacher. He wanted the experience. He was totally frustrated from the fact he was sitting down to meditate and his mind was going on like leaves in the wind. Words were flying through his head. And then the teacher was calling him, come, come here, on. And then he's saying to the master, I'm supposed to be meditating right now, you know that. And he promised, then finally the teacher called him, and then he got up. When he went to the teacher said, mountains can give you what you want. Here. And he slapped him in the chest. He went into that state. He never came out of it. He's been walking around since. And that's what we're talking about. It's a natural biological thing. It's no magic. But it's locked up in you. Just as much a caterpillar is knocked up carrying a butterfly inside itself.
So in any case, to get back to it, Swami needs both the walking state, the walking samadhi, and the 15 minutes in the delta state. But they're not necessarily, one doesn't necessarily produce the other.
You first have to go through the first 50 minutes. You experience non-moving, then moving. You can't go to college before you finish high school. You must pass through the immobile state.
So it's the process of getting to the, reaching that 15 minutes that you experience the immobile.
Right.
And when you've reached the 15,
yes,
then it's walking,
yep,
mobile.
After you pass the first 7.5 to 15, that's about 14 minutes, you're totally immobile. Exactly 15, you're becoming mobile. They call you Swami, master of yourself. Not self, self, C-E-L-L, atomic matter. That's 15 minutes in Delta. You stay an hour now, that's 45 more minutes. They call you Parahamsa, one who transcends all the illusions of the atomic mass and is capable of modifying the atom by spoken word. Then if you go 12 hours straight in Delta, they call you Ascended Master. And if you make 24 hours without any deviation, they call you Avatar. That's your test.
Mm-hmm.
No imagination and on your part, you gotta pass it.
Mm-hmm.
So because this is a cosmic university and Daddy is the biggest principle.
What about a Purna Avatar? What about a Purna Avatar? A complete one, such as, say, Krishna, total.
He has to achieve 24 hours. Once you achieve 24 hours, you're an avatar.
Mm-hmm. But I thought
then when you come back now, you're a manifested avatar. It's called Maha. Meaning you generated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So where are you going to go?
I thought there were various levels of completeness.
No, you have total.
You either are or you aren't.
You have the total control. You are in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So where are you going to go now?
Oh, so by 24 hours you mean it's now permanent?
Yeah.
Rather than, okay. Thank you.
That's like a professor emeritus versus a PhD and a MA and a BA. Like our friend Rashnish, who says, first got to pass through your BS. And then you get to your MS.
So is this, as far as the Swami is able to achieve Delta State 15 minutes per day?
That's the minimum time required for you to be in that state of Delta known as Swami, Master of Self.
Mm-hmm.
And in the moving state, mobile, not immobile. You have to live it. You have to be able to do it.
Uh-huh. But that's each day now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the next 45 minutes, which makes it 1 hour, it's called Parahamsa. You can't give yourself these labels. You have to earn them by being capable of slowing your brain down and functioning in the Delta level, which is 4 cycles a second.
Mm.
And the required time of the clock, 15 minutes, 1 hour, 12 hours, 24 hours, working your way through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Jesus was in the tomb for 3 days and, you know, he was resurrected again, what state was his brain in during the 3 days?
He had achieved the full 24 hours. Now I can point out why he achieved the full 24 hours and didn't need to withdraw periodically to meditate or come pray while with me in the woods. It's simply because in his previous life he was the disciple of Elijah, who asked Elijah for a double portion of the Spirit. And being in that position, the teacher said, you ask a
hard thing. A double portion of the spirit, and you're not ready for it. You know what you're asking for? You may not even understand what you say to yourself as a student. But the teacher will not deny a student his request. Every teacher puts you through your paces. So you can't return his request by saying to him, you ask a hard thing. You don't know the implications of it involved, but nevertheless, it's yours if you see me before I go. Now, that means this student, if he isn't able to stay in Delta level, to focus on the teacher's capability to interface within the atomic mass of being visible and invisible, he's going to be forced for the first time to stay totally awake for 24 hours a day and watch inside, because you'll never know when the teacher will slip out between the light rays into the invisible rays of light and back into the sonic rays. So his teacher is giving him the real test now. Put up a shot, buddy. You want to learn about being a master? No, you're going to find out this is not conversation. You're going to sit down and you're going to talk us and meditate. So you really pushed him to the wall. So he mastered it. And then the teacher gave it to him. And then the teacher went off. They said, you got dropped in a fiery challenge. But then he performed many wonderful things after the teacher went away. But because he broke one of the rules, and the rule was to ask for something that he was not entitled to, because there were others far more evolved than him at the very moment in time who were doing their meditation that they were entitled, because passing the power of spiritual unification from a teacher to a student is the right of a teacher, not the student's right to ask for it. So you violate that right, you have to pay for it. Therefore, you still got to compensate the karmic law. You can't break karmic law because there's no something for nothing in this universe. It's always something for something till you find out what you've done. It's very subtle laws. So, because he violated for asking for something that was not his, that might have been belonging to someone who was far more evolved, he deprived that person the legitimate transference of power. Therefore, he must pay the price. And by and large, he will have to have someone who witnessed the act on that level of emotional and spiritual behavior, called spiritual thieving. You are stealing something that don't belong to you from somebody who is definitely entitled to. And so when he came back to live the role of Jesus, these two people came back to confront him. The one who he took it from, who he was entitled to have it, and the one who witnessed by being present in that life to the act of stealing it without having earned it, and without the right to it. But because he pressured the teacher would not refuse him, the teacher gave it to him. So he came back. The two men that you have to face him, because that's double portion of the power, to resolve and take these beings back. The first one that he took it from, that who was entitled to, was the man that came back and after the world here. Because in essence, he betrayed a truth. To ask a teacher for something that a student has no right to ask a teacher for, the power of cosmic awareness, the right to transfer that power to a student is in the right of the teacher. And the student doesn't have the right to violate, let alone betray that right, or usurping that right, or forcing the teacher into decision making. That's a betrayal of spiritual law. So he has to face this in his own karmic unveiling. He's coming on as of the Messiah now, one who lifts up, a spiritual nurse made. So for that reason, he's going to make compensation for his mistakes. He comes back. He faces Judas. Sent to him. master, remember it? Remember Thomas and Gregory? He knew who he was, by the way. But he was no ordinary thief. He was the guy who stole, the guy that stole the Lord gave to chop his hand out, but you labeled him as a thief. This guy was a gorilla, fighting against a Roman. I was going to be made an example by the Romans, not the cost of power that represents a country, but I wanted to try to show that we can insurrect against it. But that, again, is the frame of reference of power that the man Jesus now is going to work out. So his student, that's the funny part, is the thief his student, or is his thief his conscience on the cross? It was not the student, because he had students. But this one is on the cross, and they met there when they were at crucifixion. And he said to him, Master, remember me? And thou comest into thy kingdom? How can a man ask another man such a deep scientific law, implying all obligations of life, if they aren't working on subtle laws, demanding it? It's the answer that tells us now that the commitment and the violation rate occurred. Then he said, verily, verily, this is in fact, on this day, this very moment in time, you and I, ain't nobody else, not a joker down there, or anywhere else, it's only you and I, will be in paradise. Paradise is no place. It means beyond all desire. You cannot do that to another human being if you don't have the power to pull them out of their tethered up of the brain. Because only in Delta you are desirous. Totally non-geometric, totally non-verbal, and totally non-numerical. And that's the clean brain for the first time. Delta. Now, to take a person out from all the beta range, the alpha range, and the theta range, you better be able to go in and stay in Delta for a long time to pull the other joker through this schizophrenic level of the first 7.5 minutes, where you think he's fooling himself and he can do all kind of magical parts and wake up his head. So he told him in simple language, very, very, in fact, you and I, this very day, no other time, I'm making up. I'm paying off my dues. He took that other being with him by the power of cosmic consciousness right back to the source of unity and love. Now, they never mention what happened to the body of that thief on the cross. But they sure mention that it took from Jesus' body, buried it, and it never showed up. But you know, on record is that the thief's body, after that, it didn't run. It's in the Catholic Church. On record. But they never realized it was still after. It didn't show any sign of decomposition. But they were too busy involved with what? At the moment of what? Trying to find where Jesus had disappeared to. That they totally ignored the thief's body on the cross. But when they went back into their records and the people who took out the body after it died by breaking it in those days, it never did show any sign of decomposition. On record, now in the Catholic Church alone, there are over 360 some odd case histories of incorruptible bodies. And there are so records of bodies that they can't account for where they gone. So they're not trying to deny the truth, they're trying to validate the truth. And every religion, that means any method, has had someone to accomplish this. This tells you the truth is one, and the thoughts are many. And no one thought is unique. What is unique is the individual taking an obligation and fulfilling it and not running from it, no matter what it is. That's the test. It doesn't matter if you're a Baptist or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Christian. Take the obligation and finish it.
We don't always recognize the obligation. Well, we always recognize the obligation.
Yes, it's the strip of your head. But you're born with
it. In recognizing the obligation of it, can you tell if that quote by the fact that it's something that you would run from?
Before the man Jesus was born, three crazy jokers who lived in the prison of their country decided they're going to go look for some crazy baby, right or wrong. Were they not kings, head of their country, who could pass life and death on nothing with him? Were they that wise men in the sense that they had all the knowledge available for them to look into truth? Why would they want to leave their country to go look for them baby? God, they ain't bringing anything more. Right there, you're looking at astrology or astronomy. You're looking at the scope of the commitment written there in front of their eyes. Is this individual truly what he claims to be or going to be going to live out? They followed the star, they say, and arrived at the location. And then they brought three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now imagine somebody giving you gold in those days, you're no powerful after that. Let alone a king giving it to you. And frankincense and myrrh, that means the family was taken care of. So the obligation that what you came for. And at age 12, he tried to show his obligation what he came for. But it freaked out the people too much. They didn't ready for it. When a 12-year-old kid can tell 90-year-old people how to run their life, that don't make sense, right? So, as they say, he came on his own, refused it that. Or didn't accept it. But then, for 18 years, they have no record in the Middle East of him hanging around there. Where did he go? Records show he went to other countries and other places to study from 12 to 13 to 18 years, the journey, the last years. It's evidence that he did go and study and did awaken his higher awareness for his true purpose. And then he returned back home and went to the River Jordan to confront his cousin John and said to him, baptizing. Imagine for one moment somebody walks up to the other guy and says, baptize me. And he says, no, you baptize me. I'm not even worried to do all these things. Two grown men arguing who should throw their water in each other's head. Isn't that kind of preposterous behavior? Unless it's something deeper than that. But nevertheless, suffered to be so. For this is the real righteousness. Why? It is when Jesus came to that pond, that Jordan River, he made a remark about that man who was doing the baptism that makes this particular condition of wanting him to baptize him to be important. And forcing the issue for him to do it is what he said when he arrived. The first thing he said when he arrived and looked at all the people there, he made this remark. There is no man born of woman who is greater than John, right there standing, who is Elijah that has come. To this day, Catholic Church cannot remove that statement in the writings, because that's a direct exclamation and statement of a past life and a recognition of the incarnation. That John the Baptist is actually Elijah, and Elijah was actually the guru or teacher or master of Elias, the student that came back to play the role of Jesus, and they got to wind it up. And if you don't wind it up, we don't have any factual science. We got a bunch of figments of imagination. But it's because we're making all the connections and all the restitutions, we say Christianity is not imagination, it's about its science, not church yet. So he pressures John, who is Elijah now. And why is John saying, I baptize by water, may come one whose shoes I'm not even worthy to unlatch, I heal baptize you by spirit. Why? Because in the previous life he gave up the power. The student forced him to hand over the power. A double portion. Give me a double portion of your power. You see what I mean? He didn't say give me just enough what I need. Give me a double portion. Go dip into that reservoir of yours, man. Lay it on me thick. I'm going to play this role of master, so that I can really lift up the world, because I want to be the cosmic nursemaid of the future. And that's what he did. He forced the teacher. But then he has to be respect and restitution. That is why when you graduate with a diploma, you can't just invent your diploma. You gotta show it come from some source of quality. I graduate from university, sir, or my own invention of the diploma. Actually, the university is there, alma mater. Who is Jesus' alma mater? To give credence that he can go forth and do the job without putting water in your head. Doing it by the sheer power of love to the hand, as they call by the spirit of the alma mater, is the one who's got to give credence. That's John. So he goes there, and he has to go down the humility road. You baptize me. You do it. Come on. Put me back in order. I go. Yeah. Well, let's not carry on this condition no more. I'm here to make restitution. Compassionate nature plays a role. Every mother or father forgives their child. They take people. But if becomes a thing that they don't forgive. So this is basically what happened. He went back to John, who was Elijah, to make restitution to the mistakes of assuming the power too soon. But then he has to play the role. And the teacher is already labeling it because the teacher knows what he has done and transferred. And so the teacher was ahead and initiates him or baptized him. And it's the teacher who says and saw and heard, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. In other words, compassion and the creative nature is overriding all the mistakes of the evil at this level. So take it to heart. Go forth worthy. You no longer have to pay the price of disobedience or jumping the gun. He's pleased now. The guru is really pleased now that the boy has matured to be able to come back and look at himself and then assume the role to lift up mankind. Then Jesus went away from the pond. But here's a funny joke. Imagine after he's initiated by the guru to get the power to go to the job, this John is saying, a few people right there by the river, there go your master. And he's not saying to them, no, I'm still your master. And so when the student is ready, the master is there. Those people who got up and walked behind Jesus, they were his students. And he was their teacher. And they had to get up and because John is giving them the direction of, you are looking for a guru, that's the one you got. And they said three men got up. One was called Simon, and the other two were called John and James, the sons of Zebedee, or talking about Big Mouth, Daddy Big Mouth. Because they were busy arguing who is and what.
But he didn't turn around and say, hi, I'm glad they recognize me. He kept on going. He met Machi. And then from then on, he collected 12 people. He had his job to work out. But that's exactly what the when a person passes through the levels of the brain, they can perform the power because it's endowed in them. Christ power is Christ power. There's no way we can get around it and fool ourselves it's there. That's why he knowing it being universal, he makes this offer to those who don't know it's universal. As many as receive me. To them gave he the power to become sons of God, even unto those who believe on his name. That means those who are present have the power transferred if they accept. Those who are not present, send these after. The mere fact that you accept that Christ's power is in you, you have it. And he backs it up in his own word because you have to live in the body. Back it up. You can't live in imagination. That's something you can imagine. It's something that we need the human body to do. The things I do, you will do also. I'm not good at it. Regular. He said, and greater things shall you do. You didn't answer that? Which then tells you the Christ power has nothing to do with the man Jesus. Christ's power is for everybody. If you subdue your ego, Jesus was the ego, the Christ's power is the creative power. He had to bring down his ego to identify with Christ's power. That's why the Christ's power can transfer this power to every person in this room into eternity time. You have it by bringing the ego, which is the label they call you when you're born. They call you Mary, Albert, Fred. That's the ego part of you. The real Christ you is that breath of life that they can't get to it, they can't get it. But that is you that you have the right to exercise if you identify it. So Jesus couldn't take it away from nobody. That's what he had to say. And greater things shall you do. Why? Because every challenge that comes up is for the glory of God. At the time of Jesus or in our time, that's the glory of God. Wherever you will be forced to exercise Christ's power, for whatever need, is for the glory of God, not for the glory of you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Everybody has to go home and get up tomorrow morning, and we are looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow night.
Thank you.